The Wine Bootcamp podcast today is taking a quick detour into tea. It's the beverage that's been around just as long as wine. So if you know a fair bit about wine, you should probably consider learning a little bit more about tea. I'm big into the journey of tea, if anything, because, you know, the more I learn about wine, it's always like incrementally 1 more percent, 0.5% here. But the more I learn about tea, it's like 50%, 25% more, like just learning a lot because I have so much coming from such a place of ignorance. And we're going to sit down. We got Wissam on this podcast with me as well. And we're going to sit down with Sebastian Beckwith of In Pursuit of Tea, a good friend and also just very knowledgeable person. We're only going to scratch the surface. We got about 30 minutes probably of footage today. You're not going to learn everything ever, but you'll learn a little bit more about tea, maybe a little bit about wine. We'll chat about some orange wine. And we'll leave it there and learn more as we go. So thanks for joining. Hey, listeners, how are you? Welcome back to the Wine Bootcamp podcast here. We are on location, still in New York City, but we walked uptown a little bit. We are in the tea den of Sebastian Beckwith, partner and sort of instigator at In Pursuit of Tea, tea company that he founded in 1999. We're up here in Union Square recording live. We also, of course, have Wissam here.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you for joining us once again on this Wine Bootcamp podcast where we take a look at some teas. We're going to look at some orange wine. If they do overlap, who knows? But welcome, Sebastian.
Hey, it's great to be here on the podcast.
Wine Bootcamp podcast.
An honor. Let's drink some more wine and some more tea.
More wine, more tea. Can't have enough.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having us, meeting us, Sebastian. How did tea become a part of your career? How did it all start? Can we have a tiny bit of backstory?
Yeah, I started In Pursuit of Tea, the company that I presently run with two partners, in 1999. So that's about 100 years ago, I think.
It's actually 20.
Math is not my best subject. So I started in 1999, and I had spent time traveling in Himalayas, in Southeast Asia a little bit, and used to be an adventure travel guide in a little country called Bhutan in the Himalayas. And usually after I would have a group or a couple groups there, I would go over to Darjeeling, and that's relatively close by, and that's obviously the name where some kind of tea comes from, right? Darjeeling tea.
Yes.
It's in the foothills of the Himalaya. I have a good friend in Sikkim, which is used to be its own country, now is annexed by India, but all these places are very close together as the crow flies. Sure. Maybe not as the jeep goes, but relatively close. So I'd go from Bhutan, go over to Darjeeling, go up to Sikkim, and started to get to know this whole Himalayan region. And when I went to Darjeeling, it was great to have someone point me around, and I'd rent a jeep and a driver, because there's no way in hell I would drive over there, and we'd go visit different tea gardens or tea estates. Uh-huh. And I'd have some like letter from, or like, go say hi to the manager. And the manager's like, all right, who's this idiot? And so I'd roll in and try to learn something and drink a little tea, and would do this every year when I went over. And then eventually I would bring some to friends, and then I'm like, I'm going to start a little company, and did it with an old friend of mine. I grew up together, and he was sort of in between things, and we're like, yeah, let's give it a try. And now, you know, still giving it a try. I know a little more than I did then. That's a process. I think of myself more as a student of tea. It's endless. I mean, you know, like wine, I mean, I guess.
Never stop learning.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
I think wine maybe has more steps that are acknowledged by the industry. Master, I don't even know what they are, master of wine, master song, these different things. Whereas tea, it's sort of a big shell game, sort of. There are places you can get a tea sommelier certificate. Depends on how much you want to pay to whichever organization, but there's no standard there, really.
I mean, one of the things that I love about tea, and you know, most of what I've learned is, you know, from you and or people you've probably taught here in New York. But first of all, it's a culture. Or I don't want to say it's a culture. It is associated with a couple different cultures that go back, you know, a long time, and they kind of grew up together. You can't really have one without the other in a way. So it's been around for thousands of years in a way that wine has, kind of. But also, I guess, no, that's really it. It's just the fact that it's so intertwined with human experience, and it's hard to just kind of make it an academic subject without also porting over the culture as well. You know, to learn it in a vacuum is almost, it's a futile attempt.
Right.
So you kind of have to teach, it's like sake. Like when I try to learn about sake, it's just like it's hit a brick wall. because it's like, fuck, I don't speak that language. Like, you know, it's just, you have to bring so much over with it. And I think learning about wine, is, at least from a Western experience, is a little bit easier because you're translating, but they're concepts that you're familiar with. Whereas with tea, it's like, I don't have any understanding in my life where tea would normally fit in normal, you know, organic sense.
So right, and I think that's very common for people. So I should describe the scene slightly. We're sitting around a small table with gaiwan, some small cups, and a sharing pitcher. And these are not usual implements or utensils that people see in this culture. So people come in and they're interested in perhaps using our tea in a restaurant maybe, or considering it. So they come in and they see this setup with all this teaware that they're not used to. And the first thing is like, oh my God, what did I stumble into? This looks cool, but this is not what I want for my restaurant. I just want some tea in a teapot. Right. Like, okay, whatever.
In what is essentially kind of a British,
right, Western,
westernized
style,
you know,
thing.
Yeah.
Bigger pot, steeps a longer time, da da da. And so what's presented here is something that's very common in Southeast Asia and China, etc. It's called Gong Fu Cha, or Kung Fu Tea, really. And we talk about that. Kung Fu is really skill and practice. And if it's with martial arts, that's great, or flower arranging, or tea, or what have you. It just means that I can be very accurate in preparing the tea for us to taste. Mm. And, you know, I try to immediately put people at ease. Like, I'm not suggesting that you do this for your restaurant. We're not here to do some ritual or some crazy tea ceremony. We're just drinking tea, and this is a way that I can prepare it, and you can enjoy the aroma and the flavor in small amounts. And that's the first thing. It's like this cultural thing of like, wow, what is all this stuff?
Right.
Because if we were at a hardware store in Hong Kong and you're waiting for the 2x4s, there'd be a little tea thing on the side, a little gaiwan, and they'd pour some tea and same idea.
Right.
And so the nice thing about having tea this way is it's an interaction, it's a conversation. We're talking, we're looking in each other's eyes, we're talking about stuff, and we can geek out as much on the tea or not as we want.
You know, it's kind of a quotidian sort of setup, like you said, but it's so simple, it's actually so beautiful, and yet there is this culture and ceremony sort of around it where, you know, you're brewing tea, there are steps to it, and that's what I was always kind of transfixed by, was this aspect of tea, which is very human, it's conversational, you're just kind of, you can live life while also enjoying this other thing. That's usually what I love about wine, too. It's, you know, you have it as part of a meal. You have it as part of a conversation. It doesn't dominate it. But if, let's say, conversation lulls for a second, you know, a new wine is poured, you're going to talk about it. You're going to, hey, what's going on here? Like, wow, I haven't had this in a while, or this is very unusual, or oh, this wine's corked, or whatever it is.
Right.
It allows you to kind of add it to conversation. I always love how, so, like, you pour it, you know, there's, like, the whole, there's a ritual aspect to it, which is kind of like wine. You know, you present the bottle. You know, there's almost like things that you do for no real reason, you know? I mean, especially young people when they come into the wine bar, and we saw, maybe you could attest to this. There are so many steps that are kind of part of normal wine service that people are just like, I guess, I don't know, like just open it, I just want to drink it. Like, do you find that?
Yes, there's a lot of little old school tradition, I guess, built into our daily service. Like the way, as Caleb said, you take the bottle order, there's a moment in time that you have to mise the glassware, and then you're going to present the bottle.
Sorry, would you stop to smell the dried tea leaves before I make them?
Amazing.
So sorry to cut you off.
No,
please. And what would you smell? What was that smell?
It's just making tea this way. There's so many touch points.
Right.
So you can certainly make a great big pot of tea in a Western style and have a great big mug of tea and it'd be delicious.
Yeah.
Done. But here you have all these little points. I made the gaiwan really hot and then I put the leaves in. So you get some smell from the dried leaf, because normally there's no aroma to the dried leaf.
Yeah,
so
stick
now
your nose in,
everything's hot, we're going to infuse it, and we're going to taste a little of this Darjeeling.
That's actually one of my favorite aspects of tea service, is heating the implement. I kind of throw
with
a little
water.
Bit. Just with water, throw the hot water in.
Vaporizing,
though. Throw the dry tea in. I like kind of, I mean, probably shouldn't do it, but I like shake up my teapot.
Yeah, yeah.
And just kind of, because, and then you open it up and it's like, yeah, you've just added a little bit of hot water, a little bit of heat, and then you smell it. And it kind of just like preps you for what you're about. You know, some people like open up a bottle and smell the cork.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you're kind of checking for cork taint, but you're also getting a little bit of the wine aroma too. Or it's just like pouring a taste of something, you know, like, okay, cool, I approve. Or it's just starting the sensorial journey, I guess.
And you're never going to get that aroma
right
anywhere else in the making it or drinking it, or you'll get different aromas that you can enjoy.
Yeah.
But I think it's all about all these different touch points.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be aware and pull all this stuff in, great. Smell the empty pitcher afterwards. Mm-hmm. It might be an amazing
aroma. Or the lid sometimes people...
Right. The volatiles will be on the underside of the lid, so you'll get a lot more aroma there. It's just
a way of activating maybe also the tea a little bit.
Yeah, it's... And especially within yourself, you're like, okay. So now we're pouring it into a sharing pitcher.
A Darjeeling, that's what we're...
Darjeeling is a lighter style black tea from the Himalayas, from the region known as Darjeeling.
Yeah.
So sort of like saying Alsace or Bordeaux. It's like a region. A lot of people are generally making one style, but there's always like that guy who's making the, you know, the other stuff. And some people make it really well consistently, and some people don't make it well consistently, but make it really well one day or this day of the week. That's what we're doing. We're always tasting different lots to be like, wow, this one's great. I want to buy this one. Because if you go back to that guy next year, maybe, maybe not. So
it's like natural wine.
So I just realized there's actually so much many factors that can go wrong doing a tea service and the process of infusing the tea and serving it rather than wine. No, there's so many more room for inconsistency, if you will. Let's say the staff of your restaurant that you want to put a tea program in place. There is more room for things falling through the crack. No,
I look at the wine industry and I'm like, it's so great. It comes in this thing called a bottle. And it's
a finished product.
It's pretty much when the vintner intended you. Obviously, there's storage and something doesn't work out sometimes. Generally speaking, especially in the West, you read that label, you have a good chance of, you know, knowing what it is. Yep. And tea is the opposite. It's like some guy who's like, hey, I've got some really cool tea here. Like, it comes from this mountain somewhere. You have no idea where it comes from. You know, it's
right.
Like, okay, I'll take your word for it, whoever you are.
I'll try your booze.
Right. And, you know, they try to do domain controls and appellation control. But it's still, it's like, okay, did it really come from there? Oh, it has the hologram on the package? Oh, that's
slick.
Someone paid a lot for the packaging.
Hmm. I mean, that definitely was more rampant in wine about 100 years ago, sort of shady bottlers and people buying this and that. And, you know, I mean, if you were a Burgundy producer and you owned a bit of, you know, Grand Cru Chambertin, and you owned a bit of Premier Cru Givray, and you owned a bit of Valage, you could only make so much of each one. So if you harvested a bunch of Bourgogne Basic and you didn't get much of the Chambertin, well, then you just... still make just as much Chambertin as you're legally allowed to, but you'd also just make as much Bourgogne as you can.
Backfill.
Exactly, just backfill, right? So I'm sure it happens a little bit today, less and less, but I can't. It's quite rampant in most industries. Fish, for example, you know, people don't even know what the heck they're eating.
I was in Wuyi Mountains in Fujian. It's a place where they make a dark oxidized oolong that's really tasty, or can be. You know, they, with any agricultural product, there's good stuff, there's mediocre and lousy. But so I was there just after the French, is it AOC or DOC?
AOC, yeah.
Those people were there trying to help them make an AOC region. It's a cliff, an area with all this natural scenic beauty, cliffs and walkways through it, and these tea plants grow in there, and they have a lot of minerality because of the region. So if they're on the outside, then they're sort of not from the region. They're known as half-cliff teas. Mm. And then they can be grown elsewhere away, you know, with the same name, it's still a Tailor Han or still a Dahong Pao, but grown somewhere else. So there are all these distinctions. So the AOC would just be the cliff area, the best stuff. But if the farmer owns some in the central area and he owns some out there, it's all going to be processed in the same factory.
Mm. That's maybe what a batch will be.
Exactly. It's a problem with agriculture everywhere. And it all comes back to, in my mind, your palate. Hey, why don't you taste this?
Right.
Do you like it? And don't look to me to see if you like it. It's you. It's your palate. Like, what do you think? If you don't like it or if it's really expensive and it's not worth it, don't do it.
Right.
I'm sure, like, the knowledge and the amount of knowledge that the Western consumer improved so much, right, in the last 20 years in terms of tea, besides Brits and Moroccans. I don't know that many people where I grew up in Europe that drink a lot of tea. That's very British and Northern and African, I guess. No, and, of course, Asian countries.
Well, it's part of the culture there a little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, it's tea time. It's like something happens.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times people get together or stop work or take a pause. Or,
I guess more like Latin cultures are more coffee drinkers and the rest, infusions, no?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in Italy trying to get some tea, you have to be like deathly sick.
or an upscale hotel with a brand new tea program.
I have a friend with a tea business over there. It's just like, it's tough going.
Couldn't imagine. I mean, honestly, it's hard enough over here. I think that we've made some inroads, but there's so much more education to bring to Americans. And I mean, what I love about the sort of American spirit is that people are kind of into anything, you know, as long as it's good value and it seems cool and there's something to it, people, you know, will eventually latch on. And I, you know, I think tea is just, it's on a very, very slow journey upwards, which is good. I mean, it's been around for 8,000 years. It shouldn't all of a sudden pop off overnight.
Right. You know, and it's had its day historically. I mean, we were huge importers of tea back in the day from Taiwan.
And I think, I mean, obviously people still drink a good chunk of it, right? It's sort of in that, in a bad sense, the tea bag sort of culture, which is obviously fine. It is what it is. I think, I mean, you can speak to this better, but there's, you know, the loose leaf tea, and then there's the tea bags, and then there's probably, you know, some other quality step along the way. But,
And I think, you know, it's all about, where are you going to enjoy this beverage?
Yeah.
And we could just talk about beverage in general. We could be in the south of France where you have a plastic jug that you're filling up. You're at the vineyard, right? Out of the thing, and you take it back to your house, you know, and it's like the hot south of France kind of scene. And yeah, that's where you drink it that way. You drink it in a plastic cup on your way home. In the same way with tea, you can have it in a tea bag, in your mug to go, you're running to get somewhere, you need a little caffeine, and that's fine, you know, and different teas will be better for that, you know, lower grade, more broken teas are going to give you more of that oomph in the morning.
Right. Different times for different beverage.
Speaking of oomph, is it tane the equivalent of caffeine, is that correct?
It's similar, but it's a different compound. There is some caffeine as well as a theine, and the theine is sort of one of those feel-good molecules that doesn't, kind of one mushroom, and it's especially present in some of the green teas, especially the covered green teas, so like a matcha or a gyokuro has that, so sort of mood-altering, people might say, but generally makes you feel good.
And how do you spell that? Just so.
T-H-E-I-N-E.
Theine, no.
Yeah. Before we had the Darjeeling, the second flush, so it was a little darker, and now we're going to have a first flush, which is harvested early in the year. And it's much greener in appearance and in production. So now looking at the leaf, it looks green, right? So it's going to be more floral, or I shouldn't say what it's going to be. I should just pour you some, and then you can tell me if I didn't over-extract it here. This was just sort of to see two different styles that are made with one plant. And Darjeeling is a tea that I think is... It can be difficult to make well. If you oversteep it, you're in trouble. The tannins will jump out and, you know,
oh, there's tannins in tea.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was like, wow.
Well, actually, I was going to bring that up because, in a way, I imagine the Darjeeling probably had more, but it almost had more body in general, so the tannins were kind of hidden. Whereas this, like, you get that bitterness pretty pronounced.
Right.
Because sort of the fruitiness of the tea is in the background. And I mean, as we steep it, I imagine, you know, the more steepings, the more the tannins will fade and maybe the fruitiness will come out. Like, I love that sort of, like, arc.
Right,
I can just see a graph in my head of tannins over time and fruitiness over time. And then, but right now, the tannins are quite intense. And this is sort of the flavor, at least experientially on the palate, or sensation that reminds me of orange wine. So that'll be what we have to break into next. But it's sort of that very subtle tannin, you know, because red wine and like Darjeeling, I would say, are kind of similar, where it's quite obvious that you're having tannin. It's almost more like, what else is going on your palate, right? It's like if you drink champagne, you're like, ooh, the bubbles. Like, yeah, sure, I get that. Yes, there's bubbles there. What else are you tasting? And here, you wouldn't have expected it because the color's so light, but yet it's so bitter. So we'll have to maybe keep that in mind for when we bust into the orange wine next.
A break from the tea conversations for 1 second. Caleb, you just got back from a trip, isn't it?
I did, yeah. I just was in Paris last week, and I'll be honest, so this part of the reason was going was to try out this this airline called La Compagnie Boutique Airlines. It was my first time flying business class across the Atlantic Ocean, and let me tell you, from getting to the airport, which is at Newark, the boarding process, which was like the smoothest, least stressful thing I've ever encountered. Getting on the plane, it's all business class. Everybody, there's like only 2 seats max. You're only sitting next to one person. And the seats fully recline, 180 degrees, which, you know, leaving at night and getting there in the morning, it's nice to like not have to like get your 3 inches of recline and like hopefully you get 2 or 3 hours of sleep and you wake up and you're like stressed and
hopefully not sick in Paris. And this was a very smooth, very comfortable experience that I was very fortunate to be able to check out.
And how do you book those tickets?
So they have a website. It's lacompagnie.com. You can book on there. You go straight through them. Super easy. And honestly, round trip flights, you know, New York to Paris, they start at $2,000. So I think it's a pretty good deal, frankly, for how comfortable and like stressless the experience it is. So strong recommendation if anybody ever goes to Paris, worth looking into.
Cool. Thank you. Let's go back to the tea conversation.
Back to tea.
So this is technically a green, you said, or
well,
this is an oolong, or it's a weird one.
That doesn't fall.
Defies categories.
Like every, usually if you go on a company's website, they would list the Darjeeling second flush and first flush under black tea. Mm. But it's really not a black tea. It's undergone no oxidation. It's undergone a long withering process. So after they pick it, let the leaves sit generally overnight, and the moisture is going to come down a little bit. Think of the leaf like a camellia leaf or like a rhododendron leaf or something. That if when you picked it and you bent it in half, it would snap, right?
It's, yes.
So if you let it sit
even
overnight,
fresh.
Yeah, fresh, right. It would snap. But if you let it sit for overnight, maybe with a little air going through it, it would be pliable. It wouldn't break
right.
anymore because the moisture content would come
drop.
Down. Yeah. And so then they roll the leaf and it wouldn't break. And then they dry it and
with
just
heat.
Stop the process with heat.
Yeah.
And so if it was making a second flush tea, they would roll it. And then let it sit for 4 or 5 hours or 2 hours or what have you, and just allow it to turn black. It would oxidize. The essential oils in the leaf connect with an enzyme, and then it's an enzymatic browning that happens to the leaf.
Hmm. So it's like oxidation in wine, you know, letting it sit in a barrel or something like that.
So black tea is just tea that has been more oxidated than green tea, or is a whole new variety? Sorry, maybe it sounds stupid question.
No. We could take the same plant. If you take the tea plant, you can pick the leaf and dry it, and that would be white tea. No processing. You can pick the same leaf. Think of basil leaves. You let them sit there. Maybe you cut them a little bit or just leave them on the cutting board. You come back. After your day, they've turned brown or black. That's how you make black tea. So then you just dry it. Obviously, there's rolling and there's other steps, but essentially. And if to make green tea, you would just pick the leaf. And as soon as you pick the leaf, it's going to start to oxidize. It's going to start to change color. And you don't want that to happen. And so the way you stop that is with heat.
You stop heat.
You stop it with heat.
Or you interrupt the oxidation with heat. You get rid of the humidity.
Right. So the Chinese call it sha qing, or killing the green. You're killing that enzyme. So you could just throw it in a wok for 5 minutes with fresh leaves. You pick them, throw them in a wok. That's going to inactivate that enzyme. Then it'll never turn black. It'll be a big wet sort of pile, but it'll never turn black. Then you can roll it however you want it rolled. Then you dry it, and that would be green tea. The Japanese do that with wet heat, so they steam it. Same, they're just using heat. You steam it for 2 minutes or 3 minutes. So you can do dry heat or wet heat. And depending on which form of heat you're going to use, that's going to affect a little bit the taste and the flavor of the tea.
Yes.
Like we might be able to say the Chinese style would be nuttier and more vegetal from that process. And maybe the Japanese tea might have a brighter, higher note, maybe something marine.
Like fish a little bit.
Yeah.
Every time I smell a certain type of tea, a green tea, I get immediately those, I don't want to say iodide, but a little bit like maybe I associate with sushi, because every single time I go to a sushi place, usually order a green tea.
Does it pair well?
I don't know.
But yeah, we should taste some of the Japanese green senchos. But sometimes people will have a fishy character and a pu'er. You're always surprised by what you taste.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of taste, we're going to try a little orange wine side by side. That's all right.
Nice.
Mix it up a little bit. This is an orange wine from Austria. This is by Michael Gindel. It's actually a blend of Pinot Blanc and Grüner Veltliner. And I wanted to bring a skin contact white wine, aka orange wine, that wasn't from a very aromatic white grape or like a thick skinned white grape. Like Pinot Gris, you know, almost looks like a red wine. Sauvignon Blanc, Gewürztraminer, Muscat. They make amazing orange wines, but they're already so aromatic. So it's almost cheating, but for me, it would kind of be outside of the realm of when I would normally think about tea as like a tasting note. With these sort of subtle grapes, in order to get all that flavor, you really need to steep it on there for a long time and or skin. So 12 hours of maceration here, 50% of the grapes, 8 hour slow press, and then 4 month maceration of the other 50%. So 4 months is a fair bit of time. It's It's, you could say, and one of the tasting notes I have is also like oversteeped tea, right? The color's almost identical too, which is pretty cool to me.
Yeah, we just did a second
photo there.
Infusion of the first flush Darjeeling, and the color is almost exactly the same. That's impossible.
So Sebastian, what aromatics would you get on the wine?
To me, it's cidery, but then it calms down a little bit, but I still get an appley thing going on.
Definitely.
What do you get from here?
I get like a bitter orange skin.
For me, I'm like, oh, grape skin. Oh, ha, ha,
ha. All right, then on the palate, it's a different story. Huh? Change a little bit.
Wow.
So I get like a peach. Like a lot of like just like a nice fresh peach, almost like a peach if you were to cut it and then freeze it.
Do you?
Now, having it in my mouth, I get that. Before, the tannins are in a different place than the tea.
Right? My mouth is all over the place right now. With after the tea, is like it's amazing, but having a hard time to analyze my taste bud to listen to them.
Well, there's a lot going on. I mean, it almost pairs with the tea. It almost pulls back the flavor that you had with the tea a second ago.
All in the middle of my palate,
right?
And the tea was on the side.
And actually, then you drink some tea. And then the wine flavors kind of get refreshed. So kind of going back and forth, it's a really cool, experiment.
And that's something that, you know, we don't see much in this country, but if you're in Asia, you often have a bottle of wine on the table and tea.
Yeah.
And it's such an enjoyable way to enjoy a meal because you get hydration throughout the meal. It's nice to go back and forth. And also the difference between the warm beverage and the cool, you know, the cool beverage is fun. It's something we did with that champagne and tea pairing.
We did the bubble tea event.
So in one context, would you bring those two products together? Wine and tea.
The easiest way to answer that is in the Western world is to say like a tasting menu or something where you're already sort of primed for this gustatory experience of onslaught of food and beverage and wine and everything that's going to hit your table. And you're ready, you know, like you're like, cool, I'm in the zone. I can't wait to taste things. And it'd be amazing to have this alongside a meal. I mean, even like for me, like all vegetables or something, like really like roasted vegetables where you're going to get these cool arcs of flavor from the fresh crisp to the roasted and the oxidized and the bruised and all that. And I think tea and wine, I mean, they undergo the same experiences, right? So you're finding where they overlap in your brain
or on your palate.
Right. I almost can't tell like which one I want to drink, you know, it's like, fuck, it's so much fun. It's nice to go back and forth too.
It's nice to go back and forth. And it's incredible what it does to your palate. Like, brings the focus back here, and then the tea washes it away, and then back and forth.
People need to be having more beverages more often.
I'm curious about how they interact with each other, theine and alcohol. How they interact with it, so stimulants and whatever alcohol is, how they interact with each other.
It's on the low level compared to what probably
I'm not sure if it's
people are doing, like the Red Bull and vodka. It's a little different.
Yes.
It's more like microdosing.
Because I feel so I'm already jittering a little bit in my body right now. I just had a tiny coffee a 2 hours ago, and now this, I feel already some.
Well, the tea sort of high or drunk, whatever people say, like you feel it, and you almost can't turn it off. You know, like with coffee, I guess you're probably more used to it.
I think tea is like the marathon, and coffee is the sprinters.
Yeah.
That's my interpretation of.
And it's interesting also, sometimes we just taste the tea in our mouth or we smell it, but sometimes it does something to our body too. Like it makes you feel, maybe it makes you sweat a little bit, or it makes you warm in your lower back or in your whatever.
I'm glad you're bringing this point. Is a consumer now shifting from aromatics teas to functional teas? Is that a thing? Is that real? Is that people are looking for more Asian culture, right? There's always a benefit beyond the just pleasure moment of 20 minutes, but there's also maybe a healing component to it, or as you just said, something in your body more than just taste buds and pleasure and social moment.
Right. So it's interesting that you said more of an Asian thing. I'm thinking it's way more of a Western thing. And so then when I'm saying functional, I'm saying maybe that's what this specific tea is doing, an unblended tea, single origin tea is doing to my body. Whereas like now when you say functional tea, I'm thinking, you know, these guys with a smoothie and they put a little matcha in, a little turmeric and a little of this and that to be functional. And so totally two different directions. I'm not really interested in tea because it's good for me.
Right.
I'm interested in tea because it's amazing and has so many flavors and stories and places associated with it. And that whole thing. I'm really happy that there's a lot of studies that say, yeah, it's pretty healthy for you. Like, that's great. You know, none of those are conclusive and this and that. And so I'd say drink the tea you like the flavor of, and don't be like, oh my God, this green tea is going to have a couple more antioxidants. You know, if last night was really bad, like they think that drinking two more cups of tea is going to wipe away last night. Yeah. No, you have to be healthy with everything. You have to balance everything.
Interesting. You guys taking notes? That's a lot to learn. It took me a long time to justify the price of great wine, to convey that to my friends, to the consumer, to my family. If the tea is going to maybe hit the market in the future, like establishment will start having their tea menus and stuff, the tea time, high tea is called, like all the hotels in Williamsburg, they all have that now nowadays. Of course, now I noticed that people are looking for single origin and meaningful certifications and all those, like, I don't want to say fancy credentials, but all that. There's going to be a price increase following that, right? And like, if you travel literally 3-4 times per year in remote places, expect us, the people who doesn't travel, to pay more premium, no?
Right. And it's a difficult thing because tea has always been a commodity. So you're taking it from supermarket shelves. Every package says exotic tea from faraway lands. I'm saying that on my packaging using slightly different words. No one really knows that tea is an agricultural product. I mean, they know it, but it's just so, no one's ever seen tea growing. It's like, oh, those beautiful tea gardens off somewhere. There's such a disconnect. And it's also, everyone uses the same word. So a black tea bag from Twinings can be Assam, and then the spectacular Assam with amazing flavor costs so much more. A tippy, you know, second flush is maybe quite good, and no one thinks they have the same name, and it's two different price points. And so people can't keep that separated in their head. It's like saying, oh, I love Italian red wine. How come yours is more expensive than this guy? So that's what I'm up against all the time. Oh, jasmine pearls? Oh, yours is expensive. Well, we sent the green tea 6 separate nights with separate batches of flowers to scent it. We don't use synthetic oil and some lousy tea that we're trying to get rid of. So those are both jasmine tea, and the price points are going to be astronomically different. So it all comes back to the palate.
Exactly.
Well, I think, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there.
Yes.
But
that was great.
Lots of life parables, I think, that we can continue to learn one cup at a time. Sebastian, thank you for joining us today.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you. That was awesome. Thank
Looking
you so
forward
much.
To the next one. Come on.
We'll queue it up. We'll queue it up.
All right.
All right. Listeners, go brew a cup of tea, pop a bottle of wine, try them together, have some fun, and always drink in moderation.
Take care, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.